You're listening to New England Public Media News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist NEPM's Week in Review. And joining us today on the line, Matt Safransky, editor of Western Mass Politics and Insight, and Larry Parnas, investigations editor with the Berkshire Eagle. Matt, Larry, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Adam.
This week, a group of Springfield City councilors asked the U.S. Department of Justice to require the city to enforce reforms in its police department. The feds last year issued a blistering report accusing narcotics officers of a pattern of excessive force and misconduct and made recommendations on how to remedy the problem, and some advocacy groups are also pushing for the same thing. Mayor Dominic Sarno and Police Commissioner Cheryl Claprood have defended their handling of the situation. Matt, as we record this, there's also a pending lawsuit between the council and mayor over reestablishing a police commission. With this latest pressure, could this be a turning point for making long sought after changes in the police department in Springfield?
Yes, but they're kind of on two separate tracks here. So as far as the Department of Justice is concerned, whether there's a police commissioner or not is not really anything to do with the kind of reforms and changes that they're looking at. However, for a lot of people in the community, the police commission is an essential part of some of the reforms that they see as necessary. And I believe some of the activists that were calling for the consent decree between the Springfield Police Department and the Justice Department, U.S. Justice Department, also were supporters of the commission.
Larry, what's your take on all of this?
You know, on this consent decree issue, I support that call. That seems very fair and reasonable. I mean, you said blistering report. That hardly captures it. There was excessive force here, and it's really hard to see how officials in 2021 can really seem to be slow walking police reform on that issue. So the Department of Justice is the final arbiter of civil rights issues. They recommended change. Where is it?
Also this week, there was word thousands of convicted drunk driving cases in Massachusetts could be retried. The state's highest court found certain breathalyzer test results over an 8-year period to be unreliable. Isaac Mass is a Greenfield attorney who says this could impact people with multiple convictions.
Removing one changes the entire calculus of what their suspension may be. It could be someone who had a lifetime suspension no longer will.
Larry, your paper, The Eagle, reported this week the Berkshire DA's office is sending out 900 letters to defendants. They say they'll look to dismiss cases that are based solely on the breathalyzer evidence and will move for new trials for the others. Larry, do you think this is the right approach?
Well, if these breathalyzers aren't working and yet they're used as sort of a fulcrum of prosecutions to obtain convictions, then there's something very wrong with that picture. You know, the DA's office is suggesting that people who were convicted on OUI charges talk to their lawyer or their public counsel to see this through. These devices are back in use, and people have paid a price. You know, as that speaker just noted, legal fees, in some cases, losses of jobs, certainly lots of transportation headaches. You know, the State Office of Alcohol Testing was shown in the court case that led to this suspension of breathalyzer use to have hidden documents and to, you know, have used unproven science. So there is redress needed here, and I think the new trials are quite fair play.
Matt, with problematic evidence affecting thousands of cases, will this affect public confidence in state government and law enforcement?
It's possible. I mean, I think that, you know, for a lot of people, you know, when it comes to drunk driving, you know, it spurs a lot of emotional concerns. You know, we're 30 or 40 years after the rise of Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and Massachusetts was, you know, on the leading edge of some of the changes there. You know, it would certainly bother people and advocates who have been looking for change for a long time. But I don't know that the quality of the conviction process is necessarily something that's on the public's mind on a regular basis.
Meanwhile, this week, more than 80 Massachusetts state lawmakers pushed the Baker administration over plans for a new Holyoke Soldiers Home. One recommendation calls for 40 fewer beds in a proposed facility compared to the current facility. Legislators are also looking to get more input in on the project. A deadly COVID-19 outbreak last year led to the deaths of at least 76 veterans and prompted several investigations. Matt, one state senator, John Velas of Westfield, says it's hard to see fewer beds being needed at the new soldiers' home if there is to be one. Is he right?
Well, he makes a compelling argument that talks about, like, we still haven't seen the full impact of the need for the soldiers' home among veterans of the current wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, to say nothing of, I mean, we're only 30 years out from Desert Storm. You know, a lot of people that are may have been veterans of that war may not even be in the need for the services that the of soldiers' home could eventually provide. So it does seem like the decision to go smaller, you know, has more of a penny pinching feel to it rather than, well, we just don't need the same amount of services there anymore.
Larry, more than 80 lawmakers signing on to this letter that was sent to the Baker administration this week means many from outside of Western Massachusetts are paying attention. Does that mean there's a better chance these concerns are going to be considered?
Gee, I don't know. I thought you could read some of the developments on this front as being a kind of a typical play of lawmakers seeking to obtain state dollars in their districts or in their region. You know, already the Holyoke Soldiers Home was hardly a true backstop for caring for veterans who needed care at the end of their lives. I mean, there is the Federal Veterans Administration Service, and there's been a long waiting list at the Holyoke Soldiers Home. I think they could double the size of that, and it still won't really answer the question, is this a place that could become a go-to, reliable caregiving institution for all veterans? I don't think they'll ever get there.
And finally this week, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker said 120,000 new appointments for COVID-19 vaccinations will be available next week. And Larry, of course, Massachusetts has been lagging behind other states, including Connecticut, in getting these shots out there. In about 20 seconds, why do you think Massachusetts has been behind?
Well, I could see the very tall governor shaking his head about the lagging comment. They just had different priorities. And we've heard from so many of our readers about how come I can go to Georgia and get a shot or New York. They were more focused on equity than other states. I think the major change here is that there's a new wind behind all the sails here, and that is the stepped up supply of vaccines through the Biden administration. I think that's going to make the major change, and Massachusetts will benefit. All states will benefit.
Matt, last word in the 20 seconds we have remaining?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think there is some, obviously supplies are an issue that everybody has, and there was the way that the state had already planned out its process. We've seen a number of situations where the state has stumbled relative to peers like Connecticut, and I'm forced to think that there just were certain issues maybe with staffing in the administration that were not prepared to deal with this in the way that we would have hoped.
All right, Matt Szafranski with Western Mass Politics and Insight, and Larry Parnas with the Berkshire Eagle. Thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome, Adam.
You're welcome.
And thank you for listening to The Shortlist, NEPM's Week in Review. You can catch us at any time, wherever you get your podcasts, or at nepm.org/podcast hub. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Media.